Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'd like to talk for a bit about the Democrats who've been running for their party's presidential nomination. It's obvious John Kerry has the delegates he needs to be that party's candidate. But Dennis Kucinich has been in the race and continues in the race until now, and he's doing it because he wants to influence his party. And I'd like to run by you a few of the major issues that Dennis Kucinich stands for. For example, universal health care, guaranteed education, pre-K through college, pre-K before kindergarten through college, the government would provide full Social Security benefits at age 65, right to choose, which is the right to have an abortion. For a woman who's pregnant with a child to have an abortion, so we're going to look at some of these issues, and maybe we'll have an interesting perspective. Now, Dennis Kucinich, he is a U.S. representative from Ohio, and he admits that John Kerry has the delegates needed to be his party's candidate for president. But Mr. Kucinich says what is yet to be determined is what does the Democratic Party stand for. Therefore, Congressman Kucinich remains in the nomination race to influence his party. Now, we here at Bob Enyart Live, we are perhaps the polar opposites to Dennis Kucinich. I've been a right-wing Christian talk show host for 12 years now, and I'd like to talk to Dennis about, Mr. Kucinich, about the great divide between conservative Christians and liberal Democrats. So, Congressman Kucinich, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on your show.
Well, it's great to have you on, Congressman. And I've got a quick question to start out for you. As a right-wing Christian, I see the foundation of our side of the political spectrum. We see within the Ten Commandments the only basis for good laws. Do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery, do not bear false witness. Could you tell us where do your side of the political spectrum, where do you guys get your foundation from?
I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I mean, I think that there has to be an ethical basis for life anywhere and on this planet and in this country, and that in a way the principles on which our government was founded inevitably derive from spiritual principles. I mean, in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson writes of nature's God, the first motto of the United States. Or the motto of the United States, In God We Trust, which is on the back of a dollar bill, which is pretty commercial. The founders anticipated separation of church and state. I don't think they ever thought that America should be separated from spiritual values.
Mm-hmm. And so if what you just said is true, I believe it's true. There is a debate, for example, with the Ten Commandments. While the Ten Commandments are engraved in stone at the U.S. Supreme Court, the liberal side of the political spectrum is fighting an aggressive social war to ban the Ten Commandments or any reference to God from government, from government buildings, from we could add quite a few examples. We recently had on the show Judge Roy Moore from Alabama, who's a good example. If what you just said is true, that good law must have as its foundation the Ten Commandments or spiritual truth, then why does your side of society fight against that?
Well, let me say that there's a couple different issues here. One is the imperative in a democratic society of separation of church and state, which the founders sought to occur so we wouldn't be, all worshiping the Church of England. And so they wanted a separation of church and state, which I think most people in a democracy know that protects both the church and the state. Mm-hmm. In terms of the principles of which are integrated in society, which are spiritual principles which come from all religions, I think that most people want to respect people who, you know, people who are professing spiritual principles. The question is, you know, where does it go from a generalized celebration of spiritual principles, and when does it cross over to the doctrine of a particular religion?
Well, yeah, our founders clearly did not want the government to identify one Christian denomination as the official government.
Right, here we are in the 21st century, you know, any particular denomination.
Well, any Christian denomination. Denominations.
Well, you know, see, I know that there are people who say that, you know, we're a Christian nation.
Right.
Except that, you know, we wouldn't want to preclude from the celebration of democracy people of any religion or any belief, or people who don't believe any of it.
Well, no, but when the 13 colonies got together and ratified the Constitution, a number of those colonies paid for Christian ministers out of their general fund.
Right.
I think the first.
I understand that. And I think that, you know, the point.
But Congressman, they allowed freedom of religion. In fact, this country offered, I think, the greatest freedom of religion the world had ever known. And that was under the stewardship of governing officials who took a pledge to of faith in the Bible or Jesus Christ.
Well, let me ask you something. What would you like to see in terms of the government? I mean, if you could have it, you know, if you could have it in a way that you felt was the most fair, what would it look like
from
your point of view?
I think the government should acknowledge our Creator God, and that His law tells us that murder is wrong, adultery is wrong, stealing is wrong, and that these things should be criminalized. We shouldn't legalize the sexual exploitation of women, for example, right? When you begin to tear down that foundation of God's law, then where do you stop? We, you know, the Taliban covered women from head to toe. In America, we strip women naked and put video cameras around them, and we broadcast that. We put it on cable. So there are the two extremes, and in the middle is how our nation started with sexual morality was not protected by government. And so that's one example. Where do we go when we've undermined that foundation?
I know that, you know, we're all, you know, we all look for some kind of guidance and some kind of rules that we can live by. And again, the founders didn't want the government to be involved in establishing a religion.
You're saying
I think they really wanted to protect for the free exercise of religion, though, and that is that anyone would be able to celebrate and practice their religion without the government stepping in and saying, well, you know, we don't sanction that kind of religion. And I think in a democratic society, that's healthy. But I want to go back to a point that I made earlier.
Yeah.
And I feel very strongly about this. And that is that that I think there must be a role for spiritual values to be expressed in a democratic society. The problem comes when we want our particular spiritual values to be the rules by which the government might operate. And that becomes a little bit tricky when you have a pluralistic society with so many different types of religions. You know, on the other hand, you know, I think it's healthy for a debate to go on to talk about, you know, should there be an expression of spiritual principle? I think there always has to be. I mean, how could you even get up in the morning if you weren't literally engaging in an act of inspiration? So I think there's a we get in this fight in this country over separation of church and state, when I think that the next level is, what about the principles by which we live? Isn't it possible to have both separation of church and state and to have a nation which is guided by spiritual principles, even if it isn't directed by a particular religion?
Well, if we don't acknowledge where those spiritual principles come from, obviously there are conflicting theological perspectives. We're fighting a war right now against terrorism, where the guys on the other side shooting at us, they call it jihad, a holy war. And so they have spiritual principles, and we submit that their spiritual principles are wrong, that it's wrong to intentionally target children, to kill children, to get others to agree to your political goals. And so we weigh our spiritual principles against theirs, and we say that the Islamic extremists are clearly wrong. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think that what we strive to do is to make sure that any expression, religious or not, stay away from extremes, especially when it means killing people. I mean, no one wants to advocate that anyone die. And when that finds its way into a particular religious expression, it can become, you know, very dangerous, particularly when it has a political implication. The problem is that, I think, as we all know, I mean, there are people who practice Islam who are very peaceful people. I mean, the greeting that they give to each other is one of peace. And I think, you know, when the stereotype that emerges is very damaging to Muslims, as well as to all of us who have to weigh these stereotypes against our real life experience with people who are peaceful.
Well,
in the same way that some people want to diminish the role that that Christians have in a democratic society by trying to paint certain Christians being extremists. The fact of the matter is that people need to be met on the terms as they are without being stereotyped. We need to talk to each other. I mean, that's where it starts.
Congressman Kucinich, it seems like, listening to you carefully so far in our discussion, a point of disagreement is you're saying our founding fathers did not establish this country as a Christian nation. We're a spiritually neutral nation. Whereas,
at that time, that there's no question that that was a dominant religion in this country. We all know that.
Well, and the first, I believe, if I recall my history, the first act of Congress was to print 5,000 Bibles to distribute among people.
And I have no problem with that.
Let me ask you this. In the Constitution, Article 7 of the Constitution, I think I'm about to quote to you the least quoted phrase of the Constitution. It's speaking of the ratification of the Constitution by the states. And it says that this was done in the year of our Lord, 1787. So that there was, and they were very aware of every single word, every preposition they put into the Constitution. And so the acts of Congress, a number of the 13 colonies, to be a governing official, you had to take an oath to uphold that you had faith in the Holy Scriptures or in Jesus Christ. And the Constitution itself at least refers to Jesus Christ as our Lord. So now, if you're admitting we need a spiritual foundation to have a cohesive society, we Christians are saying, why are you liberals trying to rip the Judeo-Christian foundation out from under us?
Well, see, I can tell you, I mean, I consider myself a Christian, and I happen to be a Catholic. I'm a Christian, and I think that, matter of fact, the citation that you made, the year of our Lord, that's actually stems from a Latin phrase, Anno Domini, which translates to in the year of our Lord. That's A.D. That's, so we're in 2004 A.D.
Years,
Anno Domini. That's
yeah.
That's year of our Lord, and that translates directly to what was in the Constitution.
Well, that's since Jesus. That's how many years they measured since Jesus Christ was born.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we recognize that as being one measurement of time. Now, not everyone measures time in that way, as we know.
No, that's true. But most of the world, every Sunday, the wheels of commerce cease turning. And the reason that happens on Sunday is because we Christians remember that Jesus Christ rose from the dead on Sunday.
You know what? It's kind of nice to take a break on Sunday for whatever reason. And I can tell you, though, that we have Jews who recognize another time that they take a break.
Yeah,
I think in a democracy, it's important to respect any time anyone pauses to recognize something transcendent and spiritual, or if they choose not to pause because they don't believe in any of it, well, in a democracy, that has to be okay, too.
Well, right, and I think you find conservative Christians completely agree with that. We believe in religious freedom, but we think religious freedom is most protected on the foundation of Judeo-Christian principles. Certainly, within Islam, there's a battle going on right now for control of Islam, and there are at least tens of millions of Muslims who who seem to publicly side for, when they're polled, surveyed, they root for Osama bin Laden. They see him as a hero. So,
well, you know what? But I don't. Let me just tell you, as someone who has a substantial Muslim constituency, I don't think that's true. I mean, no. I can just tell you that.
Well,
from my own constituency in Cleveland. I mean, I represent in my constituency in Cleveland as a member of Congress.
Yeah,
I represent Christians of every denomination, and Jews, and Muslims, and Hindus, and Buddhists, and even some atheists, and more. And so I have found in dealing with people in the Muslim community, people who are very peaceful, who are good Americans, who just are so upset at what's happened, who strongly support the United States.
Well, Dennis Kucinich, don't you think that Muslims in Dubai or Yemen or the West Bank might have a different opinion, and they might fill out surveys differently than Muslims in Cincinnati?
You make a good point. I mean, look, I think in any religion, you're going to find differences as you go from nation to nation. I mean, your point's well taken.
Well, at 9/11, I remember seeing on CNN, I believe it was, the spontaneous response of Palestinian Muslims when they partied in the streets, fired their guns in the air, and the old women, as is their custom, threw candy to kids in the streets when thousands of Americans were slaughtered. And
I I saw those same reports, and I have to tell you, I mean, it was hard to interpret them because I wasn't there, but I can tell you that it was very disturbing to see that, of course.
Well, right. So what we could see is there's a religious battle going on within Islam, and there's a significant minority who is aggressively supporting what we call terrorism, the intentional targeting of women and children. Go ahead.
Isn't it true, though, that Christ taught us that we should make peace with our brother, that we should love our enemies? I mean, see, this is where we're challenged to really move towards that higher law of love that we're commanded to observe, and it's challenging. It's challenging because you don't like to have your religion attacked. You don't like to have people say that it's not a good religion or that it's less than. And I think all religions, we need to find a way to practice acceptance and tolerance so that there can be peaceful coexistence.
Well, Dennis, I happen to be the pastor of Denver Bible Church. And we've just spent a year going through the Gospel of Matthew, and Jesus Christ repeatedly upheld the Mosaic Law, and he even – one of the most harsh laws that Israel had in their covenant with God was if someone murders or kidnaps, they should be put to death, and if a Jew were to curse his father or mother, he should be put to death. And Jesus Christ, the Gospels quote Jesus Christ saying, this should be the law here in Israel, but you all reject Jesus Christ because you all reject God's law because you think you're smarter than God. Jesus Christ was angry at the people because they ignored God's revealed law, and they thought they were smarter than God.
Didn't Pastor? Let me ask you something though. Didn't we really see a kind of a transition take place when we went from the Old Testament to the New Testament?
Well, that's commonly said by liberal Christians who somehow they think that in the Old Testament, God was messed up and he went for counseling in the intertestament period, and then God became nice. But Jesus, Dennis, Jesus Christ, he was pretty harsh. He said, for example, bring them here, those enemies of mine who would not obey me, and slay them before me. He talked about a judgment day in which the wicked would it would be better for them if they were drowned in the sea than to harm innocent ones.
And I remember that.
So we could look at Islamic terrorists or Christian extremist terrorists if it's happening anywhere, and we could condemn it based on the spiritual principles in the Ten Commandments. But if we're going to look at killing children based on atheistic evolution, if that's our standard, that was basically the Nazis and the Soviet Union.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
How do we use spiritual principles to keep the world together, to keep it from disintegrating, to keep it from, you know, going into war and religious conflict?
Well, okay, I'll give you an example. Arab people and Muslims around the world hate Americans. They hate us for a number of reasons. Let me give you some significant reasons why they hate us, and I think these reasons have validity. They see their families compared to American families, and they see grandparents, children, grandchildren, and they see some cohesiveness and integrity in their relationships. They see in America a majority of families breaking up, and they see us promoting sexual immorality. You could turn on satellite cable, get a DVD, have lesbians, gang raped, acted out, and they see that our sexual immorality is influencing their children. Some kid who lives in the West Bank works at the King David Hotel doing laundry, and his grandmother's worried because he turns on the TV of an empty hotel room and sees lesbians having sex. And they realize that America is exporting the worst of our culture to Muslim countries, and that they fear how we've destroyed our own kids, that we're going to help to destroy their families. So if we had a spiritual foundation in here where we said it should still be illegal to sexually exploit women, it wasn't good that we legalized sexual exploitation of women. So since we've lost that part of the foundation, hundreds of millions of people around the world who know right from wrong have a bigger reason to despise us and to fear us.
Yeah, I think, you know, I understand what you're saying, and there's a couple of different issues there, one of which is that, again, in a pluralistic society where religious freedom exists, but control of the state by the church does not, there's always going to be this dynamic tension over values.
Well, in America, we didn't have the church controlling the state, yet adultery, trying to seduce your neighbor's wife, was a crime.
Right. Well, it's actually against the commandments.
Right. And it was a crime. It was against the law. You call the police if someone's trying to seduce your wife. Now, because we are losing our foundation, well, let me ask you this. You think it should be legal? You've got a woman with a couple kids, and she's poor. She's struggling. You think it should be legal for a man to say to her, I'll pay you $3,000, come into my studio, strip naked, allow these other men to inject their bodily fluids into you and do that naked and let us video it.
I mean, of course, that's very, the scenario that you portray there is very distressing. Are you kidding?
Well, I mean, Christians.
Of course. Who wouldn't have their conscience shaken and their heart broken? Because you know what? I mean, first of all, I'd like to see, you know, that woman have a chance for a job where she wouldn't have to worry about, someone plying her with other ways of making a living.
Right,
I mean,
just because she's right, but so she's poor. But the government should remember back to the time when it said we know right from wrong, and it's wrong to sexually exploit women like that. For example, OSHA.
Well, it's wrong to exploit anybody.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. You know, OSHA, where occupational safe and health issues. They, you know, in a hospital. If a drop of a fluid from a patient went onto a nurse's face, there'd be an OSHA committee meeting about it. Rightly so. But in Hollywood, men say to women, we're not going to pay you unless you allow these men to inject their fluids into your body. It seems just from a risk standard, we would, the government.
You know what? I don't know enough about how that works to be able to confirm that that's what happened.
Well, the porn industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
But and let me just tell you something. I don't personally have enough of enough insight into that to be able to offer an opinion.
Okay. Well, we saw two Broadway shows last week. My wife and I, we stayed for a week at Times Square. And about 7 years ago, there was a Christian actress who won a lead in a Broadway play. And she's known to be a Christian, conservative, religious woman. And she won the lead, which was extraordinary. And then she was told, by the way, you're going to have to take this other role, be a, what do you call it, standby? I forget what you call it. A standby actress.
Right.
Understudy. You got to be an understudy for this other role also. In that other role, there are men in the cast who would have to grope her, grab her breasts. And she said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to allow my coworkers to do that. And they said, well, then you can't have the lead. And she was dismissed. Mm. And my point is the government has a double standard. When it comes to sexual immorality, our government is blind and says, the sky's the limit, guys. You can do whatever you want to these women because we no longer have the foundation of do not commit adultery.
Well, you know what? I've got to go to my next call, but I want to say this. I would like to have another opportunity to be on with you. I think that this kind of discussion is very healthy because you have determined a course of action to try to live a righteous life, and I respect that. I really do. I think that we need to have people who believe strongly in things and try to follow, you know, the right path towards life as they see it. And we also, what I advocate is that we have a kind of tolerance in this country where we follow Lincoln's teachings as well, when he said, with malice towards none, with charity for all, that we try to find a way to be tolerant enough that people can pursue their highest goals and aspirations and their spiritual practices. At the same time, they don't drive out anyone else from trying to do that. And that in a democratic society, I find the toughest questions, Pastor, come when you try to balance religious principles in a secular society. It's very hard to do that. For any of us.
Well, Dennis,
so it's always a challenge. And I can tell you that I respect someone who takes a path towards God at any time. And because it, for all of us, it is a path that at once becomes highly personal and other and challenging. And we have a lot of compassion for anybody who's on that path because it is not easy.
Well, Congressman Kucinich, we'd like to take you up on your offer to come back again.
I'd love to do it, and I thank you so much for.
Well, you're welcome.
Commitment.
And if there's one thing you could go back to Washington with, ask OSHA, why is it that the pornography industry gets a green light from OSHA?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll be glad to look into it.
All right.
I appreciate a chance for you. It's good to be on your show. And
well, thank you, Congressman. We'll have you back. Thank you very much. That was Dennis Kucinich, U.S. Representative from Ohio, who's admitted that John Kerry does have the delegates needed to be his party's candidate for president, but says that it's yet to be determined what the Democratic Party stands for. And so we had the opportunity to have Dennis Kucinich on the show, and we talked it through and said, well, what are we going to do? We're going to argue about the war. We're going to argue about George Bush. We're going to argue which issue. And we thought, well, it might not be fireworks. Because, you know, I talked to my producer before the show, and this is what he said. He said, Bob, if you point out the Ten Commandments, and if you say that's a foundation for good law, no matter how liberal he is, he's going to agree with you. Because liberals don't quite have the courage to say we're really against the Ten Commandments. And so we thought it's going to be, it'll be a mellow conversation, and that's okay. Our goal was to point out that if you lose track of the Judeo-Christian foundation of law, then where do you stop in your fall into immorality? Where do you stop? So, hey, thanks for tuning in to Bob and Yurt Live today. Sunday, we had a great Easter service at Denver Bible Church, and you're invited to come on out this Sunday. And by the way, you can call us to get our Bible studies at 800-8NYART. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.